Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I ask you how much you paid attention to NBA All-Star Weekend, and judging by your responses, you paid zero attention. Except here you are telling me that you paid zero attention. I like it. You are more enticed and engaged by our radio show, even though we're talking about the NBA All-Star Game, than you were by the actual NBA All-Star Game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. If you missed it and you wanted to watch it, by the way, it is being re-aired on NBA TV and will likely be re-aired multiple times on the NBA network over the course of these next few days until the NBA actually tips off again. Thanks so much for joining us on what is a holiday for many people. Whether you're in banking, banker's hours, what's banker's hours, please? Banker's hours, banker's holidays, pshaw. Whether you work for the federal government or you're in an industry that shuts down for President's Day, maybe you're a school kid who gets off this long weekend, which is kind of fun. I know my niece is excited about that. We are happy to have you alongside. Some of you may be traveling, driving out of your regular routine. So welcome aboard After Hours on CBS Sports Radio from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So we've got a poll up on Twitter, and we also have a spot on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence or A-Law Radio. And our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We'll drop in more from Charlotte and the All-Star Weekend as we go, especially the Anthony Davis comments. This was the first time we really had a chance to hear from him in the wake of his trade request and then the fact that the Pelicans did not oblige. They weren't having it. They decided they want to do things their way. And so now the rest of the season, is he okay to play? Well, we'll find out, right? Because he does have the shoulder strain. He played, I think, 5 minutes in the NBA All-Star Game. But the Pelicans can be judicious when it comes to that injury and use that injury and his health as a reason to be cautious. And I think it's pretty obvious that Alvin Gentry's over the drama. He called it a dumpster fire and would like to focus more on the guys that he has on the court, at least for now. So we'll get more of that sound on the show so you can hear from the NBA's biggest and brightest stars. But there were some other big stories over the weekend in sports. We'll talk about the Daytona 500 coming up here in 15 minutes. I love Daytona. It's the great American race. All the pomp and circumstance. If you missed it, J.J. Watt was the grand marshal, and Julian Edelman was the one waving the green flag. It's extremely popular with other professional athletes, and they really enjoy the opportunity to be part of the pit road area and hang out with drivers. I mean, it's one of those kind of mutual admiration societies, and so For NASCAR, this is the way they start their season with this incredible race, all of its tradition. The 500 that used to be run on the beach, that it's had several cars go into the water, Lake Lloyd, that's near the track. I mean, it's got such an incredible history. And yet it was reduced to a demolition derby over its final 20 laps, which was really disappointing in my opinion. So we'll talk about it coming up. There certainly was a very emotional final lap, an emotional winner. More than just the checkered flag was this race to Denny Hamlin and to his team owner. So we'll do that coming up in 15 minutes. On Friday, the NFL, would this be considered a Friday news dump? Wait, I think it was Friday. Now my days are running together. I think it was Friday. Yes. Friday, the NFL and the duo of Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed announced separately on social media with almost identical statements that they had settled their collusion case in what is a sealed proceeding. Confidentiality agreement in full force. In other words, We don't know why they came to this agreement to settle the collusion case that Kaepernick and Reed were bringing against the NFL and its owners. And we're not supposed to ever know. Who knows if that holds true? The problem is, if any of this gets leaked, not only is the grievance settlement, the settlement then potentially at risk, but anyone who would leak it could be facing charges and, or in the case of the attorneys, could be disbarred. So there's a pretty hefty price to pay if you take the chance on leaking anything that comes out of, or that came out of this particular grievance. Now, it's been fun to read some of the speculation. Why did the NFL agree to settle? Why did Kaepernick and Reed agree to settle? And there are a couple of things that I think are pretty obvious to me, someone who covers the sport. The NFL didn't want to deal with, didn't even want to mess with, didn't want to touch, didn't even want to think about the fallout and the damage to its image if it ended up losing this collusion case, right? So the league is all about its image. I don't have to do very much convincing for you to know it's true. The NFL very often makes decisions based on how it will impact its image. For those of you who are diehard fans, you're going to stick with the league no matter what because you care about the football. But you only have to go so far back as the national anthem controversy, the Ray Rice situation, maybe even the Adrian Peterson case, to know that casual fans will tune out and will make their departure felt when they believe that the NFL has waded into these waters where they can simply not be a part of it, right? So the domestic violence issues, the national anthem protests, not a criminal situation, so don't put words in my mouth. But certainly there are a lot of people who didn't like the fact that there were national anthem protests and tuned out. I've got some of those people in my own family. Now, I don't know that the boycott made a huge impact, but there were certainly ripple effects with viewership, but also with advertisers. And so there are millions and millions of fans. There are large denominations of fans who won't tune into the NFL, who will spurn the league if there are these controversies, these stories that bring bad PR and that get picked up not just by sports networks, sports radio stations, but also by news networks. And that was definitely the case with the Colin Kaepernick protests, as well as the fact that he's been out of the league for 2 years and has made some pretty public accusations and now is bringing this collusion case. So the NFL, in my opinion, had a lot to gain by settling and, of course, keeping it confidential, because any damage that might be done to its image for settling pales in comparison to losing a collusion grievance if it would go to an arbitrator, right? So they can absorb whatever backlash they get now. For instance, Kaepernick and Reed's side, their lawyers are claiming victory. Except it's kind of a hollow claim because we don't actually know. There was no victory here. Both sides made concessions. They agreed to keep it private. And they've settled. So there's no admission of guilt from the NFL. So whatever rhetoric surrounds it, speculation. And the league doesn't mind that. The league deals with those types of shots all the time. They do have Kevlar. They are coated in Kevlar. And whatever bullets are being fired the way of the NFL right now are not armor-piercing bullets. And so the elite can withstand this type of bad PR. if it had lost the collusion case to Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, you're talking about a whole separate level, Mach 12 type of criticism and damage to its image. Not to mention there would be this social media rhetoric that the NFL was racist and everything else. I mean, you know what the social media mob is like, right? So just imagine, let your mind run away with you and know what kind of damage would be done if the NFL had lost this case. Here's something else that I thought was really interesting, and I read this from a lawyer, which it hadn't dawned on me, but that's why lawyers make the big bucks. If they had gone to the arbitrator, regardless of how the ruling played out, so whether the NFL won the case or whether Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid won the case, all of the communications, all of the information, whether it be text messages, whether it be emails, whether it be interviews that were done in depositions, all of that becomes public. More than likely, we would have access to all of that. Do you really think NFL owners want their private communications getting out? Even if they can't be used to prove collusion, do you really think those owners and the NFL want to give the American public a peek behind the curtain at how they do business? No, absolutely not. So in not only settling, but in keeping this confidentiality aspect, all those communications remain private communications. And just think about it from your own perspective. I know that you and I are not NFL owners who have billion-dollar businesses. But would you really want all of your private emails and text messages getting out? Or if you were deposed under oath? Even if you had nothing to hide? Do you really want all of that becoming public? And so that was an aspect I hadn't considered. Why settle? Well, because you have the chance to get out in front of it. Keep it confidential. And make sure, as much as you can, that your private texts and emails, phone calls, interviews don't get out. That would be embarrassing to the NFL. Even if it wasn't necessarily damning evidence. Do you guys remember? I'm sorry, I'm laughing at this because it seems so ridiculous now. But remember over the course of the Deflategate investigation, there were a few emails from Tom Brady that became public, some of which he was going back and forth with friends about how when he retired, his numbers were going to be so much better than Peyton Manning's. I mean, it's a minor thing, right? But a little bit embarrassing to Tom Brady. We've long since forgotten, but I wouldn't want my personal emails getting out. Even though there's nothing racist or discriminatory or untoward or anything like that, it's not about feeling like you might see me as a different person or I have something to hide. It's just about those are private. And we say things in private and we communicate with people in private, family and friends, in a way that we wouldn't publicly. And that's okay. It's probably better that way. So I thought that was a pretty insightful note by this attorney that I read, is that the NFL had a chance to end this and make sure that all of that stayed private. Now, as for Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, why would they settle? Well, if his attorneys are accurate, which you would assume that they are, Kaepernick wants to get back to football. And how many times have I told you, as much as you've yelled at me, how many times have I told you he's less likely to get a job when he's suing the league? Because owners who might bring him on board would then know that any communication they have with Colin Kaepernick could be subject to evidence, could be subject to a deposition, a hearing, could be subject to being flipped and used against that owner. And so owners were reluctant to touch that because it's a powder keg. And Kaepernick was attempting to prove collusion and, if possible, disband the CBA. So that's one reason why Kaepernick, because Eric Reid already signed a 3-year deal with the Panthers, but that's one reason why Kaepernick would settle. Another reason would be because it's a really difficult case to prove. Let's be honest. Even though the collusion grievance was allowed to proceed, the arbitrator did not throw it out on summary judgment. Fact is, it's difficult to prove because the burden of proof is far more than more likely than not, more probable than not. Remember that from Deflategate? There has to be clear evidence, a preponderance of evidence, as a matter of fact, that collusion happened. And so as much as Kaepernick and his attorneys may believe that they had some shreds of evidence, it had to be airtight almost for the arbitrator to rule in their favor. So this clears the deck. I don't know if money would have changed hands. I don't know. I shouldn't assume that. I actually don't have any idea if the NFL had to pay Kaepernick and Reed money, but maybe if he was asking for lost wages or if he was suing because of lost wages. But now it clears the deck for him to be able to play football again. And his attorney believes the Panthers and the Patriots are potential landing spots. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Did you have any reaction to it? I don't know if that'd be considered a Friday news dump or not. And also on our Facebook page, how much did you pay attention to All-Star Weekend? Our phone number is 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Thanks so much for weighing in, letting us know where you're listening. If you're a new listener and you're out of your routine because it happens to be a holiday weekend, well, that's cool too. Alan says on Twitter, A-Law Radio, listening to you for the first time from Vancouver, British Columbia. Great show. So cool. That's good to hear. And we would love to hear from you too. So on Twitter or on Facebook, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I know that there are a lot of people who, over the course of the last, what, 6 years now? Well, no, we started on the air beginning of 2013. And so we're into year 7 now of me hosting shows for CBS Sports Radio, into year 5 of these weeknight shows. Weeknight, you whatever. Whether it's your weeknight or it's your weekday morning, you know what I'm talking about. 5 nights a week. And I know we've gained a lot more listeners since I started. And so maybe you don't all know that I am a massive NASCAR fan. Well, I was. I am, but it's different now. And I struggle with this all the time. I went to my first race when I was 12. I remember I was in the infield at Pocono, and I was there. We were camping out for the weekend, for the race weekend, and we had an RV in the infield, and there were all kinds of sordid things that were happening in the infield, thanks in large part to the alcohol. And because I was 12, my mom was afraid of me seeing some of the things that were happening. So I remember she walked me through the infield with her hands over my eyes so I could not see the people who were taking off various pieces of clothing and doing all kinds of other crazy things. And I just remember how loud it was that night when we tried to sleep because there was all kinds of crap that was taking place. So my first NASCAR experience was 12. My family had season tickets to Pocono and then later Talladega. I had my own for 10 years, so we had them for more than 20 years. I've worked at multiple tracks, including Loudoun, which is New Hampshire. It was in my backyard when I was growing up. So we all knew race weekend, you got out of town. So everybody else was coming into Concord / Loudoun, New Hampshire, and we were leaving, and we would go somewhere else. But then when I was in college, I worked there, and it was where I first met Dale Earnhardt Senior. And I've also worked at Phoenix and I've worked at Pocono. And so I'm a big time NASCAR enthusiast, but the sport has changed so much. And I've mentioned some of the reasons why. They've tweaked the format. The playoffs were a great idea, but the stage racing, it feels contrived to me, like they're trying to manufacture good races. The fact that so many of the superstars have retired or moved on to other positions in the sport. The fact that it is an expensive sport to attend, and it's also an expensive sport to compete in. And when the market crashed in 2009, it hit NASCAR really hard. And then there's a plethora of other options. Think about what NASCAR's up against in September and October and November. It's Sundays, for the most part, against the NFL, not to mention Major League Baseball playoffs and everything else that it competes against. And so what was once the number two spectator sport in the country in terms of TV viewership and ratings has declined to the point where they're desperate to try to find new fans and keep fans engaged without driving away their diehard fan base because of all these changes. And it's really this weird dichotomy that's taking place in NASCAR. Lots of changes intended to rope in new fans and new viewers, but you end up alienate those people who've been loyal for so long. And then again, there aren't any household names. There aren't many household names remaining. You still have the Bush brothers. You still have Denny Hamlin. You've got guys that have been in the sport for longer than 10 years, but not very many. It feels like that percentage, veteran drivers, has shrunk to the point where half the time I don't even recognize the names that are out there on the track. And then along comes Daytona, right? The Great American Race. It's the showcase for the sport, whatever you may think, and I've had this debate so many times with people about starting off your season with what is essentially your Super Bowl. But it's all about the tradition, the pomp, the circumstance. Even if you're a casual race fan or you're not a race fan at all, you know what the Daytona 500 is. And so here's this Great American Race and this iconic location. It's taking place on Sunday, normally one of my favorite Sundays of the year. And the last 20 laps turn into a demolition derby. Now, I will give you this. Casual fans very often say to me that they enjoy seeing the wrecks. Now, you don't enjoy them if someone gets seriously injured. But they're big, and they're bad, and they're fiery, and you've got cars flipping, and you've got cars on top of other cars. And that's part of restrictor plate racing. Essentially, restrictor plate keeps them all bunched together. You can't pass without help. It doesn't allow one car to be so much faster than the other. So it really becomes a team sport in restrictor plates, of which Daytona is one. One of those crashes is okay because you have the effects and you have the cool blimp view and you have the in-car cameras. One of those is okay. And I even feel like fans would be fine to sit through one red flag, which, by the way, stops the race because they have to clean debris up off the track, or they don't want to run the end of the race under caution, which is slower speeds. But in the last 20 laps, there were 5 wrecks, 2 red flag stops, a broken down NASCAR utility truck, and an accident on pit road. The last 20 laps of the Daytona 500 required nearly an hour and a half. I was getting antsy, and I love this sport, and I love this race. Don't tell me that a lot of people didn't tune out because they weren't willing to sit through it and didn't know when it was going to be over. And it's unfortunate that NASCAR had to battle that as well. Now, part of it, it's not something that NASCAR can completely control because wrecks are a part of any event where drivers are going 200 miles per hour. And would you believe at some points during this race, they were averaging 200 miles per hour. That's another reason why they have restrictor plates, is because they worry about the speeds. Before they had the plates, the speeds were 225 and higher. I mean, that's dangerous in one of these stock cars, obviously. And so they were averaging at one point 200 miles per hour. The need for speed was pretty amazing. And then boom, to a red flag stop. And you don't know when it's going to be over. But part of the issue is that you have so many young drivers, including a 21-year-old who was on the front row. You have so many young drivers that they're really inexperienced. They don't necessarily know how to navigate the draft at Daytona. They don't know how to navigate the bumping from behind. Now, it wasn't all the inexperience that caused the wrecks, though some of it was. They get over-aggressive, they get over-anxious, they're not content to sit back and wait to make their move or to have someone help them. There were some veterans who just made mistakes, but it just became overkill. Even if you're a person who likes to see a wreck here or there, as long as you know everybody's safe, 5 wrecks, 2 red flag stops, and 90 minutes almost for 20 laps at the end is exorbitant. And no doubt, drove people away. So it was too bad for NASCAR because this is the showcase for its sport. However, if you sat through all of it like I did, you got a very emotional finish. And I'll explain coming up. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's pretty amazing the way that the regular flag wavers have the flick of the wrist. I can't do it. I've tried it before with just some other flag. It's amazing the way they get the flag to fly like they do. The rest of us all look like dodos. We're just waving and flapping our arms up and down. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Amid the last 20 laps of disastrous wrecks and red flags and, oh, just everything else, accidents here and there, and I think probably a mass defection of viewers. Now, it doesn't mean they didn't come back, but you lose major pockets when all you're doing is reviewing crashes and sitting around waiting for a race to resume. Amid all of that, and despite all of that, there was a pretty amazing story to come out of Daytona on Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You don't have to be a NASCAR fan to know the name Joe Gibbs. He's iconic for his three Super Bowl wins. This is a guy who won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks and is a Football Hall of Famer. And he made a jump to NASCAR. I had a chance to interview him maybe a decade ago. What a classy guy. So much grace and dignity. And he brings such professionalism everywhere he goes. And that includes NASCAR. So he had a chance to start a team. And it's now become a multi-car team. And he made the jump to Toyota. So he's also been on the forefront of changes, cutting-edge changes in the sport. Well, his oldest son, JD, was the co-founder of Joe Gibbs Racing. So the two of them worked together when they started their racing team. And when Coach Gibbs decided to go back to football for a second stint with the Redskins, it was JD, his son, who kept the racing operations not just afloat, but successful. And it was JD who recruited many of the drivers who drive for JGR now. Again, Joe Gibbs Racing. And that includes the winner of the Daytona 500, Denny Hamlin, who won for the second time in 4 years. But man, if you did watch the last lap, what a block he threw. Woo! It was pretty impressive. We talked to Denny going back 4 years ago. We had him on the show when it was a photo finish. So it was one of those that you didn't know who won. You didn't know who crossed the line first in 2016. And we had him on the show. If you've never heard that interview, I think it's on, I'm pretty sure it's on our YouTube channel. It was phenomenal to hear him describe that last lap and that photo finish. This was different because it was a green white checker. It was overtime for NASCAR. And because he didn't, in those last couple laps, have anyone who pulled alongside him, he threw this phenomenal block, and he was able to stay out in front enough to round turn four with no competition coming up on either the outside or underneath. And he was understandably emotional once he had crossed the finish line, not just because he won the most important race in his sports schedule, his sports history for the second time, but also because it was only a month ago that J.D. Gibbs, the son of Joe Gibbs, passed away from a neurological disorder. And so not only is the Gibbs family still mourning the loss of J.D., but the entire race team was getting out there, getting back to their season, to their sport in his name.
Special for me to be able to, you know, deliver that to him in a special way. I know he would have been happy with any one of his cars going out there and getting a victory, but obviously, one with his son's name on the door and number is probably a little more special.
So J.D. Gibbs did have a decal on the side of Denny Hamlin's car. And as he was celebrating in the infield after crossing the finish line and parking his car oh so perfectly in the grass, he was pointing to the decal on the side. So it was the driver's side window, and then that, it's part of the door frame. Don't ask me. They don't really have doors. I don't know. Just whatever. It was right there near the windshield, between the windshield and the window that he comes out of, the driver's side window. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Like I said, I'm a big fan of Joe Gibbs, Coach Gibbs, for what he did in football as well as what he's done in NASCAR. And the fact that he does it with such a high standard. So he's not a guy who stoops to levels of, you know, cheating or cutting corners, anything like that. I mean, he's known for not only his professionalism, but his ethics in everything that he does. And I've never seen him as emotional as he was following this race. So he was one of the first interviews that Fox did once Denny Hamlin had crossed the finish line. And he was still emotional, as you can imagine, when they were together in victory lane.
I'd just like to retrace for a minute what happened tonight, which is, you know, it's the most emotional and the biggest win I've ever had in my life in anything. JD built our race team, was the guy that ran day-to-day operations for 27 years. He invested his occupational life in our race team. And as a part of that, he went up to purchase some late model stuff from Denny and struck up a relationship with Denny, put him in a test, put him in a truck, put him in a Xfinity car at Darlington, and finally he said, we need to sign this guy. And so that started the relationship and everything. And
thank you for that first check, by the way. I got a set of rims for my truck and a plasma TV. I was a hit in my town.
That is the truth. He had nothing, okay? And 3 years later, he bought a house next to me that was twice as big as my house. So it tells you I get in the wrong end of everything.
It's a relationship that goes back decades, but it was J.D. Gibbs who recruited Denny Hamlin to be a driver for Joe Gibbs Racing. And now Hamlin wins his second Daytona 500 in the wake of the loss of J.D. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Just, I want to repeat this line from Coach Gibbs because it floored me when I heard it. Again, you don't have to be a NASCAR fan to know what Joe Gibbs is all about, to know what he stands for and what he's accomplished. He's a 3-time Super Bowl winner as a head coach in multiple stints with the Redskins. And he said, and I quote, "This is the most emotional and biggest win I've ever had in my life in anything." And he said, there's no way this just happened. He believes it was divine intervention. And he's very religious. He's always talking about his relationship with God. And he was understandably emotional and believing that this was not just about the race. It was also about God giving him a blessing in the wake of the loss of his son. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Dre is listening in Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, what's up, Amy? I always listen to your show.
Sweet.
I want to comment on two things, the Colin Kaepernick situation and the All-Star game. The All-Star game, I'm going to be brief, man. That is one of the worst All-Star games in the history of sports. I mean, it's no competition. Everybody out there playing buddy ball, smiling and playing around. They need to just quit having All-Star game. Now, in regard to Kaepernick, I understand why he took the money, but I sort of hate that he did it because it's like I really wish all of the things that the NFL was doing, I wish whatever they doing came out because, you know, I feel like this. If they are colluding, which I mean, I'm going to say this, Nathan Peterman, that's enough. That's collusion right there.
No. Collusion means that they were working together. It doesn't mean that one team decided on its own not to hire Colin Kaepernick. That's what he had to prove. He had to prove that either two owners were working together to keep him out of the league or that one owner was working with the league. There had to be a partnership, had to be cooperation. That's the part that's really difficult to prove. He could say all day that this team kept me out and this team kept me out and this team kept me out. But if there's no proof that those teams work together to keep him out, I mean, one team can say we don't want Kaepernick on our roster. Hell, 30 teams could say they didn't want him on their roster, but that's not collusion. You have to prove that they were working together to keep him out.
Yeah, I think like this. I think some of them were, but I will say this. I do agree with you because, I mean, I think some teams just, when you've seen his last few games with the 49ers, I mean, I'll be honest, he was on the decline. I will be honest. He was on the decline. So I would think some teams didn't want him based on he didn't fit what they did. And then I think some teams did collude against him.
All right. Well, there's Yeah, that was the burden of proof. There's no way to prove it now. And I don't believe that Kaepernick and Eric Reed would have settled if their attorneys believed that they had a strong enough case that that there wasn't a chance they could lose. And that's the case for the NFL as well. The NFL wouldn't have settled if they felt like they had a really strong case and there was no way that collusion could be proved. So this is kind of a meeting in the middle so that neither side takes the hit. Because let's be honest, not only would the NFL image have taken the hit, but Kaepernick's image would have taken a major hit if he had gone and tried to prove this collusion and couldn't. I mean, either way, the spin cycle goes out of control, and now you've got this damage to one side or the other, but also the damage to the message that they're trying to spread. Dre, thank you so much for your call from Fort Worth. We're up against the top of the hour here, but I appreciate hearing from you. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or on our Facebook page. We're halfway through. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.